Hello, and welcome back to another week of the DP World Tour Picks and Bets. Skylar Hoke here. Tom Jacobs, as always, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm good. Yeah, it feels like we've had longer than a week off, right? Like, it feels like your picks that were going ever so well in South Africa were so long ago now, but it was literally just a fortnight ago. Close, Sky. Really, really close to a massive week.
Tom, I mean, Thursday morning, waking up and scrolling, it's just one of the best feelings out there, right? It's just pure anxiety the moment you wake up and being able to go through it. And in my head, as you wake up, you're groggy. It's like, you know, 5:30 in the morning, just scrolling. And I'm like, right now you can favorite guys in the DP World Tour app, or if you use Flash Score, you know, you can always do it there. But I always start at the bottom. So you keep going. And I was like, man, did I forget to click people? I just don't remember who I bet. Click going. When I woke up on Thursday morning, it was 1-2-3. You know, Keenan DeVeets, Ivan Gutierrez Gutierrez, Robin Williams, 1-2-3. And I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. Unfortunately, it did not stay that way till Thursday. One of our friends on Twitter, Golf Gambler, both had Cantero and DeVeets and the first round leader, which was sick. So an awesome win for him. I'm going to mix in, I think, a couple FRLs on our guys this week, because it makes sense when we're going some long shots for that. But you know, Cantero Gutierrez finished sixth there. So if anyone bet him with it each way, he got a full place. So I did shorter with the top fives, just missed. We got the top 10, which was a good payout too. But yeah, Tom, I would have thought we were going to keep our hot streak going to 4 weeks in a row.
Yeah, that'd have been lovely. I mean, look, I think the only positive to me, other than, you know, with the fact that people kind of faded away for you, Sky, was that Manasero won. Like Mateo Manasero is essentially... I feel like Mateo Manasero was to, I may be speaking for a lot of people here, a massive population, in fact, but like, I feel like the European golf fans kind of viewed Manasero as somewhat of like a Jordan Spieth when he came on the scene, right? Like this kind of, you know, really hot shot, talented player who we thought was going to go all the way. And he came in and tore the tour up, won his first 4 years, you know, in his 20s, right? And everyone knows the kind of struggles. Everyone that cares knows the struggles of Mateo Manasero over the last few years, and the drive has been, you know, errands and things like that. So to see him get over the line by shooting not only a 61 in the second round, where he had a chance to, you know, shoot a 59, but also shoot a 6-under final round to win by three strokes from Tristan Lawrence, who'd shot 9-under on a Sunday as well. I thought that showed a lot for him, and you know, hopefully it's a springboard to more. I don't know how consistent he's going to be going forward. I'm not sure this guy's going to pick up big wins like Wentworth every year now, but it would be good to see him kick on from this.
Yeah, I watched a good amount of it because we had guys in the mix, right? And there was just consistency out of him. His short game around the green was unbelievable. I mean, just anything pretty much was nails for par saves, or not even like testy putts. You know, he was super, super calm. Never really struggled with the lead. And, you know, those guys that got ahead of him were just on the scoring holes before he was, right? That's kind of what Tristan's run was. Yeah. But, yeah, really cool for Manasero. And having the week off was nice. And Players' Championship was, you know, kind of electric finish with Scheffler and Wyndham there. You know, for long shots like Brian Harman, good each-way cash for you on that. But fun Players' Championship. But back to a little bit more of our roots here with the Singapore Classic. More of, I guess, a DP World Tour stars-studded field with Shane Lowry, Matthew Pavon coming over, Paul Casey getting a sponsor's exemption. This is the second time we've seen Laguna, right, the golf course. Aki Stridham had won on it last year. Any takes on what we'll see this week?
Yeah, so I think previously they played on this golf resorts, but they'd played on the Masters course, which was shorter and easier. So last year was the first time they played on what they call it, the Beast. And look, it was, you know, it did seem to favour into long hitters' hands. You mentioned to me off air just now about data golf skewing the data towards longer hitters, right? And that's fine. One thing I would say is I'm not going to get too bogged down in the distance thing. I think that people, whenever there's 20 unders available, I think players can make it work if they're slightly shorter off the tee. I mean, we've seen it with many players on the PGA Tour when we say big hitters are, you know, going to prosper here. And I think it does carry over to the DP World Tour. I am slightly concerned about taking on both Shane Lowry and Paul Casey in this field. I think potentially Paul Casey more than Shane Lowry, actually. I think Lowry's having his own problems, whereas Casey, I think, has been in this situation many a times before. And has a pretty successful strike rate on a DP World Tour and in this kind of level of field. But what it has done, Sky, is opened up the field slightly in terms of the odds board. I mean, you've got McKibben 22, Jordan Smith 25, Tristan Lawrence 25. It's kind of given those guys a little bit more on the odds board. Ferguson 35 has been regularly kind of 16 and 20 to 1. So it has opened things up if you do like those guys at the top of the market.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I was pleasantly surprised with a decent amount of odds. You know, today it's kind of open and scrolling through of guys that expected 30s, 40s that end up way deeper down the board. Anybody, I guess, I think Paul Casey is the one. Prices have been cut. I think he was a little popular early on. For what you said, his DP World Tour strike rate is unbelievable. He's played decent on live at Pounding Greens in regulation. So when he shows up in the DP World Tour, he probably should be vaulting straight up to the top of the odds boards in non-Rolex series events like this. So it is a little bit of a surprise to see him in the 14s overall. I just, like we have been, Tom, we've had a really good year, and I'm trying not to, you know, adjust our process overall. And I think that starts with a lot of us often end up betting 30s and plus for guys. And I think it's me off the rip, right?
Yeah, I'll just give before we go into that, I'll just give the kind of strokes gain performance of last year's kind of top five. So Ocky Strydom was 39th off the tee, second tee to green, second approach, fifth around the green, and 58th in putting. Valimaki 12th off the tee, 11th in tee screen, 13th approach, 53rd around the green, and 9th putting. Del Rey 13th, 14th, 25th, 33rd, and 20th across those categories. Schneider 24th, 7th, 33rd, 4th, and 27th. And then Jonghyun Wang 16th, 3rd, 28th, 1st, and 57th. Now, one takeaway I would take from that, Sky, is that three of the top five finishers ranked inside the top five for strokes gained around the green, which I don't think you necessarily see too often on golf courses, which I thought was really interesting. I mean, obviously, you want people to be hitting the ball well, but even like, I mean, Strydom was second in approach, but then the next best was Valimaki at 13th. So the approach numbers weren't quite what you'd expect them to be. I mean, overall tee to green, no one finished outside the top 15 in that category inside the top five. So I think it's an all-round game, but it seems to be charged a lot by kind of what you do scrambling and around the greens, which is pretty surprising.
Especially when we got to scores of what we did, right? 1918s, yeah. To have that being led by, I mean, maybe he had a bunch of chip-ins or something with his scoring. But yeah, I guess my angle is a little bit on the distance side, but at least it's around guys that we've kept good eyes on. And leading in, I guess the one that we have been, I would say, very hard on a long time, and hard's a word of encouragement almost, of like when you're at this level of consistency that we've seen. And now I'm looking at six consecutive top 25 finishes for Richard Mansell. When you look at this entire season, the fact that he's not hitting the board and or winning in his professional career like this, it is something that of his nature and of his game needs to happen. And I think this is a perfect setup. Last year was very successful in Singapore, finishing sixth at this event. And then he's just done nothing but come out and drive the ball incredibly well. His irons are strong. And Ross Alkhaimi was really, really good with the irons. And his around the green game, to your point, has been positive four events in a row, leading with that off the tee from distance, back-to-back 10th place finishes. You're going to talk on Qatar a little bit later. It was his last one where he finished inside the top 10 there. Potentially some correlation to some success that we've seen. 33s with the sixth place each ways is really what I'm intrigued on, right? You're going to get a 6.5, 7 to 1 on Mansell for a top six in addition to that outright. I say it's going to happen. I mean, after you broke a long time streak at this course, but I'm worried about Connor Simon examples. You had to come through and basically been the same repertoire for a long time, but the number is good enough for me with the each way to go in on Mansell.
Yeah, I think that was the pause for me, was the, I feel like we're playing just for the each way part. And when you're doing that, 33 to 1 is a little bit short. It feels unfair to say about someone like Richard Mansell. I mean, we would have said that about Matthew Pavon last year, right? And then all of a sudden he wins on the DP World Tour and then almost wins two or three times on the PGA Tour in a row. So like people can very quickly evolve, and the main part is that Mansell, the foundations are there to perform really well, right? And look, I'll quickly dive into that kind of Qatar link just to say why people will like it. So Richard Mansell, as you said, there was sixth here last year and ninth in Qatar. And that adds to Oki Stridham, who won here last year when he was out of form. And he'd actually finished 16th in Qatar this year. And I think he was inside the top 10 again in Bahrain as well. Those are his... Qatar and Bahrain are his only two top 10s on the DP World Tour outside of South Africa, which I think was huge. Now, when you go more into the kind of Qatar link specifically, Sami Välimäki, one in Qatar, second here. Younghoon Wang, third here, winner of Qatar Masters. Del Rey, third here, 16th in Qatar. Forrest, sixth here, 19th in Qatar, albeit at a different golf course. Waring tied sixth in both. McKibben, top six in both. Ashwin Wu, top 12 in both. Hella Kilda, top 17 in both. Jordan Smith, the same. So it just carried on like that. There was just huge correlations between the Qatar Masters and this top 20 of this leaderboard last year. And when you factor in Qatar Masters and then Bahrain being another one where it's the only other place Oki Stridham has basically performed, I thought it was really interesting to kind of focus on this time or that period of year of Ras Al Khaimah, Qatar and Bahrain as a real mix, and Mauritius as well was somewhere that you know, Oki Stridham's played really well. So I think for me it's something that we should be focusing on and looking at, especially considering his pretty current form as well.
Right. Yeah. I think it's right in the mix there for Manzo. I mean, there was arguments. I think there is shorter prices for some of the guys. I mean, Lombard's in a range he hasn't been in. Yannick Paul hasn't played all that much as of recent last couple of times. So it wasn't the best. I thought Nakajima's number had gotten a little long versus where we have seen him. You mentioned Ferguson and maybe even Soderberg there, but who are you landing on your first selection?
Yeah, Nakajima was close to me, and as was Soderberg, but it's Alejandro Del Rey, who we've been on, you know, multiple times this season. And look, it's not been successful so far, but I think very much if we're going to say what we just said about Mansell, where you've got to be a little bit forgiving in terms of, you know, strike rate, then I think Del Rey is exactly the same. He's been brilliant throughout 2024 without having the results to show for it. He's been right in the mix multiple times this season without actually, you know, finishing the job off. And he closed out 2023 with fifth and seventh place finishes. His best finish this year so far is the 16th at the Qatar Masters, which obviously I'm really high on. But it was just the fact that he was third here last year. He was the 54-hole leader. He, you know, sniffed contention for the first time at this golf course. And then I guess you've got one or two ways. He's either going to come back and think about the fact that he didn't close the deal, or he's going to look at it and think, well, this is somewhere I really had a chance to win for the first time, and I can do the job differently this time around. And you look at the Dubai Desert Classic, he was 38th there, but he was 10th after 54 holes. He was 56th in Bahrain, but he was 4th after the first and second round. 16th in Qatar, as I've already said. And then even when he was, you know, 64th in Kenya last time out, he was 22nd at the halfway stage, which not really a golf course I'd expect him to do well on. So the course, or the current form versus what he's done on the course last year as well, just really tallied up to me as a good 45-1 shot for Alejandro Del Rey, who will, if it does get long, as people expect it could do, especially the conditions are different, I think that'll really play into his hands.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably the longest, if not, I guess, top three in the field.
And, I guess who would be Moller, I guess.
And Nicholas Norgard Moller, yeah. But no, it makes me do a double take into him because that's kind of the angle I'm at. We've been very high on him all year and expect him to break through in a big way. I think it could happen. I think he's somebody whose game I like to think of that can at least compete even on the biggest of stages and the best course fit. From a weather standpoint, it does seem that this year might not be as soft as what last year was, which you mentioned distance might not be the only way in. That could maybe take that angle a little bit less. So interesting with him. I'm still a little bit deeper. Your next guy is 50s, right? Or where is it?
You can now get 70-1 on Scott Jameson.
Okay, you can go. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Scott Jameson, 70-1. Look, he was the guy that looked like I could potentially lose to when Hoshino won. He just rallied really late, didn't he? His form in Qatar has just been absolutely, you know, breathtaking. And for me, that was probably what tipped it over the edge for Jameson. But you look at what he's been doing. He was 23rd here last year. He was 6th after 36 holes. He was 16th in Bahrain, where he was 4th after 54 holes. We know what he did in Qatar, where he rallied to, you know, potentially win on the final day there. I mean, if we're not going to forgive Richard Mansell, I'm not sure why I'm going to forgive Scott Jamieson. This is a player that really does struggle to get over the line, right? So I think that's where you've got to be understanding in golf that only one person can win each week, and whatever there is, 30 or 37 tournaments, whatever it is a year that people can win. It's not an awful lot of opportunities, despite the fact Jamieson's been playing for God knows how long. But, you know, he's got two third place finishes at the Qatar Masters, which I really like. A 12th there as well, and that's in addition to how well he played there this year. So I think with all that in mind, and just the way that he's been playing in recent weeks, I think Jamieson was someone I wanted on my card at 70-1. Statistically, he's not going to massively jump off the page, and he's not going to be considered the longest, but I think he's just that type of player that can go and do 20 under on a course like this.
Yeah, what I stuck out to me with Jamieson was, if you look at, I mean, I knew once the Qatar correlation came in, you'd be very intrigued. He closed 2023's regular season with just, if I'm correct, wasn't he the one that needed a certain score on those last like three events to make it into the playoffs, keep his card going? Like, Jamieson came alive kind of late to make sure it was important. And maybe it was that Qatar finish. No, the Qatar finish would have been in the new season. I don't know. I'm rather confident Jamieson saved his card off of a big Sunday round. And kept that form kind of going into what the new year started here.
Yeah, he does do things like that. And I think that the one thing you say about that is probably that's what his career has been famous for, is saving his card as opposed to winning. But look, this, I think the one thing I would take from this, and I don't want to sort of harp on the fact that we've got a weaker DP World Tour, right? But I think he's the sort of person that can benefit from not having to go up against Fleetwood and Hatton and Casey and all that every single week. So, yeah, I know he's obviously got to play Casey and Lowry this week, but I think he can break through.
Yep. So I'm sticking right on that same 70s-1 with Jesper Svensson. So Jesper Svensson was somebody you were incredibly keen on coming out of the Challenge Tour. I think that was one of your best calls on that show right there. And what he has done, he said two top twos, two other top 20 finishes, Kenya, Qatar, and then Byron was the T2. South African Open was the T2. And we really leaned into that distance angle, I believe, at the SA Open when he had a chance as much as anybody when Burmeister won there on Sunday. Del Rey had played well there. LaCroix, who's also really good in driving. You look at Byron, you know, that's what Fratelli won. And Aki was fourth there. You did mention Aki's kind of correlation to Byron, too. And then he has, I guess, you know, it's not even his worst week, but T67 at Johnson Workwear. We talked about quite a bit on that show in which it wasn't the same type of course setup in which we anticipated it, because it was a whole different course, right? Being Glendower versus where we were when Nick Bockham had won. So I didn't expect Svensson to fly there. So to now get him at a number in which was double where he was when he was trending in form, that's just simple for me to line it back up on one of the best drivers of the golf ball when you look at guys graduating from the Challenge Tour.
Yeah, I think potentially LaCroix and Svensson fit in this same bucket of people that had sort of one or two disappointing finishes, and we're going to jump off a little bit too quickly. I mean, LaCroix, obviously, I picked for, you know, earlier in the season because I was so convinced he was going to win after being like fifth, third and fourth his last three starts. He missed the cut at the Qatar Masters and then finished 50th at the Kenya Open, but he was actually eighth after the 36 holes, right? And I think, you know, as you say, Kenya Open maybe not so suitable for LaCroix, and you know, Svensson potentially not suited to South Africa last time out. Like, it's very easy to jump off people as soon as they've had one bad thing. It's like, oh, you know, they're not who we thought they were, or they just had a good run. And that would be a little bit of a jump and an abandonment, I think, on someone like Svensson, who's been so good for so long since joining the tour. So yeah, I mean, it's only because I've gone for the other one who I'm really impressed with, you know, coming from the same class, but I think he's great.
And even in Kenya, like, Kenya didn't end up being the course. I mean, that's when Darius Vandrio won at it. He was 11th there, and total polar opposite games when you looked at those guys. Otegwe, you know, had done really well in Kenya. You know, guys that you didn't expect Jesper Svensson to be there. I just love him showing back up at a course that should fit his speed. Let's go. We align on the next one, right?
Yeah.
All right, you lead.
Yeah, Hugo Cassard is someone who you Did you have him the week that you finished second to me, Shino? Or did,
no, that
didn't.
Was the worst part. I was rooting as much for you as Ugo had to win.
That was it, right? So you were on Cassard the week before and you sort of gave up potentially a little bit too early on him, or maybe not even gave up, just had other picks that you liked, right? And I think with Cassard, it's been so impressive. And this is what I said about a nice segue from Jesper Svensson. I just think I've been equally as impressed with him so far. Second at the Qatar Masters, obviously, as we just said there, it links in nicely with what Valimaki and Noki Strydom did. He's made 8 cuts in a row since missing that first one at the Joburg Open, and he's really settled in nicely. 12th in Bahrain is another great addition, and he's not been outside the top 25 in the last 4 events. So there's absolutely nothing really against Cassard other than whether people believe he can actually go on and win. Now, I was genuinely really impressed with what he did behind Hoshino at the Qatar Masters. I thought he was, you know, brilliant. He made Hoshino work for it. It was actually Jameson, obviously, that came on and put the scare on in the end. But, like, Cassard just wouldn't go away. And that's, you know, he can build on that. If he's in the same situation again on Sunday, I think he can really go ahead and do it. And, look, I don't know if he's necessarily the longest, but I think he's capable of getting out there and doing what he needs to at the Singapore Classic. So I'm giving Cassard another chance. 90-1, I thought was, I mean, he was 100-1 here earlier. I think that's massive for someone that's made 4 top 25s in a row and already been second at a course that I really like.
Yeah. I mean, he popped on that radar, you know, from little things. And, I mean, again, maybe I just find to lean into those that are best off the tee, because I think it's the best and most, you know, way to dominate the game as we see of golf. And maybe that's not always the same in the DP World Tour. But Ugo had those flashes. I mean, it's now 7-8 cuts in a row for him. I just don't understand the price.
No, I don't.
You know, like, I was getting some flack, I think, from you, right, on Ugo when he was 60s and we were skipping him. Yeah. Why not sticking with him? And now we're going to get 100 at what should be a really good course fit for him. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it plays into his hands, the way he's playing. He's not taking a break. I mean, obviously, he's taken an enforced break, but he's not taking a massive break off like some others have. And, yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with Ugo and how he's performed so far. So as much as Svensson seemed like a generous price at 70, to get another 30 points from Cassard, who has really, you know, been in contention to win, as Svensson has as well, I thought was really generous.
Yep, absolutely agree with you there. So 3 for me. I think that's 3 for you. You have 1 more to go, Tom. You can go next.
Yeah, Sam Bairstow, 150-1. I think I've mentioned his name probably 2 or 3 shows in a row now without really committing to him. And I think it's here that I'm happy to do so. So I've mentioned the Mauritius, Ras Al Khaimah, Bahrain and Qatar thing, you know, as a nice crossover. And he's done really well at all of them. 34th for Mauritius, 23rd at both the Ras and the Bahrain tournament. He was 4th going into the final round in Bahrain as well, which I thought was huge. 13th at Qatar, obviously, I love that. And then he went and missed a couple of cuts, and you think, oh, as we just said with other players, is that the end of them? Are they going to bounce back? Straight away, 15th last time out, playing really solidly. I think Sam Bairstow can keep coming again, and I still don't necessarily know 100% where I expect him to play brilliantly, but it's the fact that he's played so well at those courses so far that I really like. It's the fact that he's done well in Mauritius, done well at Ras, done well at Bahrain. Bahrain was, you know, really the place where he had a chance to kick on with the 4th going into the final round. And look, there is a pause in the sense of, has he really shown that he can kind of hang around? He was 7th going into the final round, Qatar, finished 13th, 4th going into the final round in Bahrain, finishes 23rd, 15th at the Johnson Wetware, which again actually came from 3 really good rounds and 1 disappointment on the Saturday. Like, I don't know. I don't know if he's ready to compete and win yet, but I think 150-1 with the places is huge. And basically, he's done nothing but be in the mix for most of this DP World Tour season. He was 7th after 36 holes at the Alfred Dunhill, finished 32nd, 34th at the final event of the year at Mauritius. And then, as I say, just he's been kicking on all year. So, no, he hasn't done the 4 rounds yet. That's why you're getting 150-1, but I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, there has been, I'm impressed by the class that we've seen, you know, from the Challenge Tour. Maybe just because we're in the muck all the time, and it's like we really know the ins and outs of all these guys by now. I've been watching them succeed. But it just leaves me still a little gutted that we aren't getting more of the Challenge Tour guys, yeah, or the Q School guys getting starts. You know, like, it is seven guys on the Q School. Not even, yeah, the top seven guys got spots for this week. Tom Lewis, first alternate. Sam Jones isn't even getting in. He was ninth in Q School. I mean, Nico Galletti, in between shows that we did, Tom, he won on the mini tours in California this past week. Get him, I don't know. It's just hard. It's hard. Ben was going off on Twitter today, and, you know, it's frustrating. I mean, if you look in this range, and again, we have that 126 to 200 in the Strategic Alliance, which is now saving guys. Max McGreevy is the one this week who's now showing up on the DP World Tour versus getting some of the starts from young guys who aren't getting there. I know there's guys from the Australasia Tour, but not even ones that are high up on this year's Order of Merit. Just an interesting mix overall.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be the person that's got to defend all these decisions, I must admit. And I know Keith Belly is generally at the front of it and the person that kind of gets the brunt of it. But there's someone that's kind of advising him on how to shuffle these kind of things. And it's a strange one. I mean, look, you've had Gumba go and win the SDC Championship, right? And they're stories that you're passing up on by giving the people that are riding a hot hand and not bothering to play them. So, look, I don't think you don't give a spot to someone like Paul Casey, who's in on the sponsor's invite, because that changes the tournament and the complexity of it completely. And he drives a Porsche around for, you know, every single day of his life to make sure he gets those invites. So, look, I think that there's probably a reset that needs to happen with the kind of rankings and shuffles, right? But yeah, I think, as you say, the fact that these players are performing well in these spot starts, despite not being able to build up massive consistency, is huge. And although Bairstow's been able to play fairly regularly, he also fits in that kind of category, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're in alignment. Okay, I'll go with my next pick, and it is just literally rinse and repeat back to the well with Ivan Quintero Gutierrez. He's as long as 300-1. On the book that's open every single day, with the top five each way there. It's 175 if you want the six places. So I'll probably land on 365 for him. But the only fear, not even fear, hesitation I had when I was thinking about him at Glendower was, I think he's got more of a power game than what was going to be expected at that course. I was in because of the pops that he had shown, you know, in Kenya, at SDC with a couple of rounds. He goes out, and then he's a first-round leader there, open at 64, 67, 68, 68. Now, in the stats, I guess, you know, looking at it from the eye test, I mean, he chipped in, I believe, three times on Saturday, or twice on Saturday and once on Sunday. Like, he had a really good around the green game. Just didn't seem fearful overall. He made some mistakes, some sloppy bogeys, but I think just the fact that he's 300-1 again, and now what could be something that plays more into his power strength. He's been 11th, 10th, and 10th his last three times out and off the tee. I don't know, Tom. I just don't get 300s. I just don't get it. I absolutely need to go back.
It's just one of those ones where I think you assume once there's like a level, right? So you get the kind of the players in the generally the 16 to 25 to one range, they get bumped down to 22 to 35 because Casey and Lowry are in, right? And then you get the kind of people that you expected to be in the 40s and 50s up to 70 and 100. And then you just get this massive kind of extension of, okay, well, Paul Casey and Shane Lowry in the field. No one that was above 100-1 a couple of weeks ago is going to really contend. So let's put them into the kind of 300-1, 500-1 bracket. And it's just name your price because they're not going to win. And look, most of the time it probably works out. Like, you know, the chances are we're going to get Casey, Lowry, Thriston Lawrence, someone, Mansell maybe even. That's Pavon, obviously coming back from the PGA Tour, Rasmus. There's so many. Tom McKibben actually, I think, has got a great chance. Like, there's so many people up there that you think, you know, they've got to beat. But it didn't do you any harm a couple of weeks ago, Sky, did it? To back him and put some faith in him, and you could be accused of just going back to the well with someone that's done well for you a couple of weeks ago. But who cares? Like, there's nothing really to suggest that he's fallen away, right? Like, if it was okay, he just did it all with putting or whatever, then you'd probably be just, you know, maybe a little bit despondent. But yeah, I can't put you off someone that was so good for you last time out.
Yeah, And that's just, it's just even a price. If it was a hundreds, I probably would have, you know, triple take. Even the 175 with six places, I'm very intrigued on if that's all you got. So he's one. I have a absolute bomb too coming up, Tom, but I want to make sure I give a shout out to all of our audio listeners. You can find us on Daily Fantasy Sports Picks and Bets the Mix on all main media platforms. We really thank you guys for all the support you give us week in and week out. Love seeing YouTube comments. We've had a really good year so far. You can find us at Twitter, me at SkyhookDFS, Tom at TomJacobs93. Just love getting to interact with you guys and kind of learn more about the DP World Tour overall. So appreciate that support. As you scanned down the board, Tom, was there anybody else that stood out to you?
I thought Marshall Snyder was interesting. He played so well here last year. He was third here last year, tied with Alejandro Del Rey. And he was actually inside the top three for the final three, top four for the last three rounds. So he was there basically all week. He was ninth last round one as well. And actually, when you look at his recent form, it's not been great, but where he has played well, he was 29th in Mauritius, but he was second after two rounds. He was 29th again at the Bahrain Championship, 13th after round one. And then he was 23rd last time out, 15th going into the final round. So you've got the two horses that we've mentioned with Mauritius and Bahrain. You've got the most recent start being positive, and you've got the course form. So I thought Marshall Schneider was interesting, very close for me in that respect. Other than that, like Rivetto, obviously I've liked, I've been playing well. I thought McGreevy was worth looking at just because like we've seen these kind of Korn Ferry and PGA Tour players come over and play so well. Other than that, not really. David Whitnall, maybe, Dale Whitnall, 300-1, I thought was pretty big. But no, nothing too serious. Francesco Laporta has been hitting the ball decently as well. But at this point, I'm just naming names.
Yeah, I mean, Gumberg winning and then making a cut and then being 300s again, you know, some deep odds there. If I kept scrolling through, I really was interested in hoping to bet Guxin Shen. Now, he seems to be the shortest golfer in the field when it comes to length. I don't know if it's the best setup. He was 20th in the Johnson Workwear, which included him being inside the top 10 of the 64 on Friday and the 66 on Saturday. Golf Gambler, big on him. I just don't know if it's the spot for him. He played in Macau on the Asian Tour and missed the cut last week. But again, he was really strong. He's only 20 years old on the China Tour last year. If I kept going through, I don't think there was anybody else I really saw outside my bet. TK, Rachanan,
yeah.
I thought he was intriguing, played well in Asia last week. We know, you know, he was what, winning at age 15 on the Asian Tour, went to live for a year. You know, he played well. Hao Tong Li was the first round leader last week.
That's probably
on the Asian Tour.
I think with Hao Tong Li, right, like it's really interesting that I actually think. And he might be the one where I've levied all these comments of don't give up on someone too quickly. He might be the one, like it's because he played so well in those couple of weeks where we kind of backed him. He was 14th at Dubai Invitational, 7th at Dubai Desert Classic. He was disappointing at the Ras Al Khaimah 63rd, but then he bounced straight back with a 16th in Qatar. And then, as you said, he was the first round leader last week, disappointing in the end. But I thought 100-1 on him in this class of field was actually pretty generous. He did miss the cut here last year, but he was missing cuts every week last year. So I don't think it's necessarily relevant.
Can't chip at all. His chipping is so bad. But but outside of that, I mean, he's going to putt. He's going to hit it a mile. His irons have been good. I mean, he fell off the map after the first round lead. But yeah, that could be something where we probably kick ourselves on how tall
his
potentially
iron,
there.
His irons have been some of the best in the field over the last kind of 8 to 10 weeks, right? So I do think there's a potential, but I don't know. You can't back them all, can you, Sky? So I would be sad if Lee did win and we weren't on him. But yeah, fourth over the last 15 weeks in terms of strokes gained approach. It is pretty comforting. But like you say, if the around the green game is struggling and that's something that we've highlighted, you know, being so important last year, then maybe that's the one reason to skip him.
So we're going to land the plane on my final selection. As long as 1,500-1 out there, Tom. You can go 1,000 with six places. So what, that's 200 for a top six. or you could go 1500 at 365 with the five each way, which is, if my math is right, that's a 375-1 top five.
Because that, so they, or, do they not do quarter of the odds though, but 365 as well if it's five.
365 is quarter, so 1500 divided by four is 375. Correct. So I think that's the play. Go with 365 for the 1500 there. And it's on Jonathan Goff Rasmussen. So he ticked a box for me, specifically his last time out. And it was at Kenya, where I believe he led that field in distance. I'm pulling it up right now. If you look at stats for Kenya, driving distance for him would have been, yep, right there in modes. Fourth in the field, Wilco, Matthew Jordan, who actually was interesting. I think his driving is getting a little bit better. Del Rey, Goth Rasmussen. I think he competes there with Norgard, Moeller, and Del Rey as the longest guys on tour. Graduated from the Nordic Golf League, and he had won their final event, or the second final, the number one tour final. In the end, played well in Q School. Pretty much was, I mean, the best player on the Nordic Golf League. Five top fives year before, was strong there. He's 25 years old. But if you remember the angle in we went with Keenan Davids the week before that I was intrigued on, was even though his finish was like 30th, he had led the field in birdies or better, showing that upside is there if you can just kind of figure it out. Well, Goth Rasmussen had led the Magical Kenya Open in birdies that week. So if you look at birdies and, you know, somebody who could drive it a mile, that's all I'm really trying to find when I get way, way down here. And for someone like him to be 1500-1 for me, I mean, if you looked at his scorecard from his like last round, 67 he shot in round four there, he had four pars. His first 12 holes did not have a single par. He had a triple mixed in there, another few bogeys, all birdies other than that. So 67 with four pars on the card. He had opened that event with a 68 when the round of the day was 66, I believe. You know, had an eagle. It looks like 17 was drivable that week, I believe, or pretty close to where he birdied that every single day. He birdied par 5, 18th every single day. So his par 5 scoring was thrown off from the triple on one. But I just think the guy can hit it a mile and he can score in bunches. Mark Ledesma on Twitter has been betting him at four figures for what seems like a year now. But I really think that 1500-1 is, and for both him and Quintero Gutierrez, I'm not going to make the same mistake. I'm going to first round lead those guys.
Yeah, I think that's smart. I think one other person, I guess, just looking at the kind of total birdie angles, Freddie Scott had made 24.
Yeah, he was short. He was so close for me.
Yeah. 24 birdies last time out. So maybe someone to look at in that respect. Also, good to see that Ugo was 26 birdies last time out. That's, you know, very promising for us. Bairstow was up there as well in terms of birdies that week. So, I think that, look, I'm never going to try and talk about a 1500s one shot. You don't need to put a lot on it. You can skip a coffee one morning and win big. So I look forward to him first round leading on Thursday and you actually being on it.
That's great, Tom. So, yeah, let's review. We can review the cards now and then.
So my final picks for me are Alejandro Del Rey at 45-1, Scott Jamieson at 70-1, Hugo Cassard at 90-1, and Sam Bairstow at 150-1.
Perfect. I am on Richard Mansell, 33-1 with a sixth place each way. Jesper Svensson, 70-1 as well. Hugo Cassard with you, hundreds. And then Ivan Quintero Gutierrez, 300-1. Get a top 10, first round leader with him too. And then Jonathan Goff Rasmussen, 1500-1, Tom, top 10, top 20. You can add on there, first round lead. Let's just have some birdies and this time maybe not mix in as many bogeys and get out to that first round lead on Thursday. But we'll call it a week there. We should be back again next week, right? We pretty much go until the Masters. We're going to be at DLF next week for the Hero Indian Open, which that course is always something. So I'm excited to go there and see what we can get, especially probably because we'll get some crossover on PGA Tour of India guys too.
Yeah. As long as you can exercise patience next week in India, you'll be okay.
For sure. Cool. Well, thank you as always, Tom. Listeners, we appreciate you guys, and let's get back in the winning tracks this week. Good luck, everybody.